What's up, everybody? My name is Matt Desend. Thank you so much for listening. This is the premiere, the very first episode of Marks and Smarts. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about wrestling, and I'm joined by a co-host today. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Matt, how are you?
I can't complain. This is kind of a funky podcast slash thing that we're doing. Ben heard me on the Nintendo Fever podcast, which then I heard you on the Indie Darling podcast. And after realizing that I had a love for Nintendo and you had a love for wrestling and those two went back and back, I hit you up on Twitter and just asked, hey, what do you think about maybe doing a couple wrestling podcasts? And at first you said, no, that's a dumb idea, right?
Oh, yeah, that was totally me. We're very much in my character.
No, you're excited to do it. We're going to talk about the Cruiserweight Classic, which was originally kind of all I wanted to talk about just because I figured it'd be kind of something simple and easy to talk about. But then, of course, SummerSlam happened, and I don't know about you, but I feel like we should probably mention a couple of things about SummerSlam.
Yeah, I think there's some things that we should hit on.
I do too. Let's go ahead and save SummerSlam for last because it's going to be, I think, almost a little bit meatier conversation. And let's go ahead and kind of jump into the Cruiserweight Classics. Or I guess even before that, let's do like kind of a small, brief secret origin type thing. And we'll start with you, Ben. How did you get into professional wrestling?
So I've probably been watching for 25 or 26 years now. I just watched the WWF when it used to come on, when it was Superstars, and grew up kind of on the Hart Brothers and Shawn Michaels and all that. And then right around probably early 2000s, I started branching out and watching Ring of Honor and the U.S. United States indie scene, which then spiraled into watching Japanese wrestling, which has just become a lifelong passion. So a lot of these guys that we're going to be talking about in the Cruiserweight Classic, I have some sort of familiarity with. But it all started with the WWF and then snowballed from there.
Yeah, that is a lot about me, too. My oldest brother is the person that really got me into professional wrestling. We grew up with the WWF in our house, watching all the pay-per-views, obviously. I grew up with my old school favorite, favorites like X-Pac and, you know, all the D-Generation X guys, obviously. I was not a big WCW fan. I was way more into WWF. And then I got way into ECW. And I still, all those guys from ECW, those are like, that was like my first, I feel, the experience of indie wrestling, ECW. Even though it was kind of a quote-unquote, you know, national program, those guys were just out there for the love of wrestling and stuff like that. Way different compared to the rest of the guys. And then after, I would say, I don't know, a little bit like early 2000s, 99, 2000s, kind of when the Attitude Era was dying out, basically. So 2001, 2002, I guess. I kind of fell out of wrestling. Like, I was still keeping up with some like basic things going on here and there. And then when Daniel Bryan made it to the first season of NXT, I kind of saw that as like a new jumping on point, because like, oh, these are guys I don't know about, right? So I can watch it and then follow their career. Luckily, I picked a pretty good guy in Daniel Bryan. But then I looked him up and saw his Ring of Honor stuff, his Japan stuff, and then I found out of other guys that he wrestled, and then I started watching a ton of Ring of Honor stuff, and then I started watching a lot of New Japan stuff. It's amazing how these wrestlers that come to the WWE now, who have these past history, you can kind of learn about all these other guys because of that, you know? I don't know. It wrestling's been a really big hobby of mine for many, many years, and I love the passion, the history, and the professionalism and the athleticism that is about professional wrestling. I don't know. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good little introduction to our care of professional wrestling. So let's get into the Cruiserweight Classics a little bit. So you have the results from by the time people hear this, which will probably be tomorrow, there's going to be a new episode airing soon, but this is going to be from episode number 3, basically, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I figure if we kind of hit on the Sweet 16.
Yes.
Because that's kind of where it really gets, you know, I mean, there's been some really good opening round and second round matches, but if you look at the Sweet 16, we've got 5 of the matches have taken place so far. So you've got Grand Metalik defeated Tajiri, who was probably the biggest surprise for me when I looked at the people that were going to be in.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, he's been gone for 10 years, went back to Japan, relocated his family back. So when I looked, it was just kind of like, huh, because he's, you know, in his 40s now. And I mean, if you're an ECW guy, I was too. ECW was my gateway brand into the indies.
Yes.
So, you know, I've been watching Tajiri since, you know, when he was wrestling super crazy and Little Guido and then tag teaming with Mikey Whipwreck. You know, he's been around forever, and I just didn't think he'd be back. And it's the rumor I've read is that he signed and he's back with them full time.
I would love to see him get a little bit more work. And I thought they used him pretty well. I thought if he didn't lose in the first round, I kind of thought he'd make it to the third round. I'm kind of surprised that Grand Metalik got the pickup win over top of him. I like Grand Metalik. I thought his first match was way more impressive than this second with Tajiri, and I don't know if that has anything to do with Tajiri and his ability or anything like that. I just thought it was a good match. It just wasn't as good as his first one. I thought his first one was a much better showcase of who Grand Metalik was.
No, I agree. And I mean, you know, I'm sure it is Tajiri and who he is now versus who he was. Yeah. I mean, there's no way around the fact that professional wrestlers, when you hit your 40s or even late 30s, most wrestlers slow down and start working a different style.
Especially
so,
those kind of cruiserweights. I mean, Tajiri was never necessarily like the highest flyer of them, but he was quick, he was fast, he was precise in his movements and stuff. And you kind of see him transferring from that technical style kind of more into that strong style just a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree. I had Grand Metalik winning only because they're still looking for that replacement for Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, anybody with a mask.
Yeah, exactly. Since the Sin Cara, the original Sin Cara didn't work out.
The botch Cara.
Yeah, exactly. Which was a bizarre thing because he was fantastic in Mexico. You know, I could see Grand Metalik going. I don't think he'll make it to the finals, but I could see him making it past the Sweet 16.
Who is he going up against in the next round? Do we know yet, or is that one still to be determined?
I think that one's still to be determined. I don't know how much, you know, obviously, so much of this has been recorded already. I don't think the whole thing has.
I'm not sure. I noticed that some guys are wearing the same shirts from, like, previous episodes, so I'm like, oh, this all happened in a single night. I would say...
They taped over the span of, maybe a couple days to a week, but I don't... You know, I feel like they definitely haven't filmed all of it because the finals are going to be live, and they're going to give away that weird trophy that the West Coast or Orange County Customs or whatever made at SummerSlam, which I kind of thought maybe they would give them a cruiserweight title. But
I almost feel like that would have been a better approach if they were going to move the cruiserweights onto Raw anyways. I feel like whoever took first place would be the you know, this is the new cruiserweight, you know, champion or whatever, you know, the first or whatever. I don't know. I think that could have been okay.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been a perfect way to introduce, you know, a new title as opposed to, you know, I think it's September 17th is when the division is going to be debuting on Raw. So they're going to be debuting with, I mean, it works, you know, they can debut a bunch of guys all at once and have a tournament or however they want to do it on Raw. So, but I would have rather seen someone walk into Raw with the championship.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's about all for the Grand Metalik. What do you got next on there?
So next was, for me, the match of the tournament so far. It's definitely the match that everybody's been talking about for the last week, and that's Kota Ibushi versus Cedric Alexander, which I think across WWE or any other wrestling platform is one of the best matches I've seen in 2016, which is not surprising because if you watch Kota Ibushi in the DDT promotion in Japan or his work in New Japan, he's just off the charts good. It'll be interesting to see what ends up happening with him, because originally I had him winning the tournament because they've made such a big deal about him, and now I'm not so sure because he's come out and said that he wants to work the WWE and continue working in Japan. And last week, Triple H said on a conference call that that's not something they're interested in doing right now. So he's got a decision to make on whether he wants to sign. I know Cedric Alexander just signed. I've had an opportunity to see him live a whole bunch of times over the years, including this past Friday. I saw him face TJ Perkins in a Cruiserweight Classic spotlight match at Evolve. But I just thought that match was off the charts. It showcased both guys. And when Cedric either debuts on Raw or debuts in NXT, he's a made man. I mean, that crowd was actually chanting, you know, sign Cedric, which led to Triple H calling an audible and coming out and shaking his hand. So in one night, I mean, he had, you know, great first round matches, but in one night, that match against Kota Ibushi made him a superstar.
Yeah, it was a fabulous match. I kind of felt like Ibushi was going to get the win on it. I thought he was going to get the win, but there were some just great moments. Both of them definitely showed why they were, you know, two men in this round or in this contest making it to the second round. I almost wished, like, that was a good enough match that could have definitely been a third round. Like, that was a great, yeah. That would have been an amazing semifinals that would have only made Ibushi that much bigger of this like sight in the finals, right? Like, if he could have beat him to make it into that finals position, because that match was that good. That's the thing, is, and it excites me to see the next one that he's going to go up against. Like, definitely one of the highlights. Like, there was a couple good matches in the first round. So far, the second one was like, oh, that's pretty good. But this one was that standout match for sure, I think, too.
Oh, yeah, it took it. I mean, it's going to be hard to follow. I mean, you've still got three more, you know, Sweet 16 matches left, and there's some really good matchups. But to have to follow that, like, I'm glad I'm not one of those guys.
Moving on, what do we got next?
So next was Akira Tozawa defeating Jack Gallagher.
This was my complete and total upset. Jack Gallagher for the win is what I was hoping the entire time. After his first match and seeing his style of smooth and class and the transition, this was one guy I never heard of at all, and I thought he did a fantastic job. And the thing that kind of bugged me about this match, and I don't know how you feel about this, is Gallagher out-wrestled Akira. Completely. He did a more technical showcase, and he hurt his leg, and it would have felt so much more, I don't know, just a better win for Gallagher if he would have been trying to go for that, you know, the German with the bridge and everything, the dragon suplex, and he couldn't hit it because of his leg, because that's what it all seemed to be leading up to. And the fact that he was able to hit it, and the fact that he did get the win over Gallagher, I felt was kind of, it just felt lopsided. Like, I thought the match was definitely in favor of Gallagher, and I thought that if he would have won, it would have felt very, like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, he out-wrestled him.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with Gallagher until the last two or three months doing the podcast that I do it with two guys from the UK who have made me very, very familiar with Gallagher and one of his home promotions, Progress Wrestling. And I agree. I've been watching Akira Tozawa for years also with Dragon Gate and Dragon Gate USA and when he used to work for Ring of Honor. And I don't know if maybe it's just, you know, a situation. There's a couple of early round matches. Arya Daivari's match sticks out as, you know, maybe they booked Akira Tozawa to win because that was the direction that they were planning to go in. But Gallagher has that WWE quality about him. Like, he's got the character. You know, there's very few guys in this tournament that have the gimmick.
And his is very developed, and it's very precise, and it's amazing how much better he is than either one of the VOD villains. You know what I mean? Like, this is what they wish that they could even kind of be like his whole, the transitions that he does and the submission moves that he does, like, they're so precise, and it reminds me of like a Bret Hart type or even like a Ken Shamrock or a Kurt Angle, and the fact that like his submissions look painful. And the fact that he's able to contort somebody and then, like, gloat at them at the same time just makes him fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even losing when he did, all these guys have been trying to find out, you know, who's being signed to a contract, who's going to NXT, who's going to Raw. I haven't heard anything concrete, but there's no way they don't sign this guy. I mean, unless he were to turn a deal down, which no one in this tournament is going to be turning a deal down unless it's someone like Kota Ibushi who wants to continue working Japan, we'll be seeing a lot more of Jack Gallagher. But I would have liked to have seen him continue on, and that's not a slight at Akira Tozawa. It just happens to be that Gallagher is the better overall wrestler, and that's who I want to win the matches, are the better all, you know, overall wrestlers. But we don't always get what we want, especially from the WWE, so... but still, good match.
Oh, yeah, for sure. What do you, it was a good match, and that's about all we can say. That's a that's not as good as the Ibushi match, obviously, but like it was one that's so much fun to watch, just like his, just like Jack Gallagher's first match as well. But who do we got next?
So next is Noam Dar defeating Ho Ho Lung. I like Noam Dar a lot from what I've seen, which is not a lot. I like his attitude of, you know, everybody's leg can be twisted the same way once they're on the ground. I mean, it's kind of the same thing that you were saying with Gallagher's. His submissions look real. And once you're on the mat, the size kind of goes away. I'm not really big on Ho Ho Lung. I don't think many of his performances have been fantastic or noteworthy necessarily. I've read that some of it is just that they're looking, you know, for their international market. So they're bringing in people from everywhere to try to get those markets. But Noam Dar is another guy that appeared in a promo on Raw last night. He signed. He's going to be part of that division on September 17th. And I get it. I think he's fantastic.
You know, Ho Ho Lun or Lun, he just seems so green. And that was kind of my big problem with him picking up the first win, is they wanted to make it seem like, oh, this guy, like he's rising above all these like, you know, big observation or big walls and stuff like that. But like, he seems so green and he seems so like there's a good chance that in the future he could like really blossom into being a very good because he's from China, right? He's the Chinese, I think he's the very first fully, or not signed, but he's the first, like, coming to WWE wrestler from China. They made, like, a big deal about it. I think this is the guy. Maybe I'm wrong. But he just seems so green, and I feel like they're only, like, kind of like what you're saying, they're trying to go pull these guys from all the different nationalities and in different nations, which is a positive thing. Like, this is a very, very cool thing that everything got done. But sadly, he's one of those guys that I think is benefiting from being the one of the only guys from China in a way. They really wanted to kind of push one of them, and he got the little push for the first round win. I'm glad he lost, just because, like you said, we want to see the good wrestlers continue forward. And Noam Dar, same thing with you. I've seen probably a total of 5 to 10 matches total. But he's always done really good. And the funny thing is he has less experience than Ho Ho, but looks way, way better, way cleaner and stuff like that. So he'll put on whoever he goes against next. And I want to say that he's I can't think if his person was booked yet either. I wish I could find a bracket, because some of these guys I know, like, there's some exciting ones. The next one we're going to talk about, obviously, which is Tony Nese versus Brian Kendrick. Brian Kendrick is, of course, going to go against Ibushi, and that's going to be awesome, I think.
Yeah, I love Brian Kendrick's gimmick or storyline or whatever. I don't even know how much of a work it is about being, you know, 37 years old, and that, you know, he doesn't know what he'd be doing at 38. I mean, I legitimately, and I don't think anybody would disagree, like, this is his last shot.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been out of the company forever. He was kind of forgotten. I mean, I don't think anybody was thinking much about Brian Kendrick, even when he wrestled those couple matches in NXT. It was kind of just he was an afterthought. I think he had all of that potential, and he had all of the international acclaim, and he worked for Ring of Honor, and then he came in and there were some attitude problems, and he didn't hit it off with people like JBL, which at the time was like career suicide. And people just kind of forgot about him, and he could have been at some point in time, you know, having been trained by Shawn Michaels, like he could have been the next, not Shawn Michaels, but the next generational superstar like that. And, you know, and then he got put in the tag team with Paul London, who had tremendous heat on him.
Yeah, that was.
And then he was gone, you know, and he did TNA, which, you know, I mean, the problem with TNA, and I don't have any, you know, this isn't a TNA podcast, but no one sees you when you go there. it's kind of like just this black hole. When they announced him for the tournament, I thought it was great because it would be a shot for him to get a contract and work. But when I heard his promos talking about how, you know, like, this is it for his career and that he's putting everything out there, I bought into it. I mean, I like the guy, and he's been having really, really good matches, and I really like Tony Nese. I wasn't always a big fan, but having gone and seen him in Evolve and then seen him in the Cruiserweight Classic, Tony Nese is a guy that they should really think about signing. I mean, he's got, you know, in that tournament, he's the only one that borders on having that heavyweight look.
Which was surprising. I am in disbelief that he weighs under 205 pounds, like, or weighs 205 pounds.
Well, and you know, the thing is, much like the UFC, like, those weigh-ins were very legitimate, but who knows how much he weighs now.
Yeah, I'm shocked if he's still, I don't know, that just seems crazy.
Because, I mean, I think his natural weight is more like 220, 225, because he's a huge guy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's not real tall. I've stood next to him, and I'm about 5'9" and he's no taller than me. He might be a little shorter, but, I mean, he's two times as big as me, and it's all muscle. And I mean, he's something special because you don't see a lot of guys that are that big or that chiseled that are that, agile. You know, I mean, he's every bit as agile as pretty much anybody in the tournament, except that he can also hit the power move that a lot of them either can't or wouldn't be believable hitting.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though he's done, I still think that's a guy that they should think about signing. But Brian Kendrick, man, I want to see him go to the semifinals. I wouldn't hate it if he was in the finals. I love the story that they're telling with him, both in the ring and through his promos.
I pulled up the brackets, the one that just has a blank slate, basically. And if we did see Brian Kendrick go to the finals, because he's going against Kato Ibushi, obviously, not tonight, but it'll be sometime next week when they start the next round, obviously. But I could see him beating Ibushi, especially hearing what you said about him wanting to work both promotions. So it'd be nice to get Kato inside the semifinal round like that, or the final four, I guess. Yeah, final four.
Yeah.
And, you know, because that's going to book him strong. It's going to book him real professional. And it's one of those fights where it doesn't matter who wins. They're both winners because, like, man, on any given night, anybody could have won. You know, it's very easy to kind of push it that way. And then if we look over to the other side to see, like, well, who would Brian Kendrick match up good if they did decide to do a finals match with Brian Kendrick, which I don't think is crazy. I think that's very possible, especially because he's done good on both matches. He's shown resilience. He's shown great sell. He's shown... like the gimmick storyline that they're playing with him too is very interesting, and it's one of those things where it's fun to see someone trying to get to the top of the hill. And then if we see somebody like, I don't know, maybe Zack Sabre Jr. go against him, it's almost like the old light going against the new light. And
yeah,
Brian Kendrick could totally lose that fight, and it'll give Zack Sabre, I feel like, I mean, he's obviously a very accomplished indie guy. This is where I found out about him, and this is where I found out that he's really, really good. So it'd be a really cool little, like, passing of the torch to Zack Sabre, possibly. I don't know. I could almost see something like that happen.
I don't disagree. The only catch, and I don't know if you've heard about this, but the company, specifically William Regal, Fit Finlay, and some other people, are not high on Zack Sabre Jr.
Really? Just for his style?
Yeah, evidently, what I've read and has been confirmed to me by some people in the UK who were at a Progress Wrestling show that William Regal was at, they think he's a nice guy. They don't really like his look, which... I think he brings a fresh look to the company.
Yeah.
He's thin. He's lanky. Who cares? When he gets in the ring, there's probably no one in the world right now that's as technically sound. But the argument that I've read is that the things that he does don't look realistic.
Well, and that's sadly a piece of kind of that indie treasure, right? Like a lot of indie shows. I'm thinking of the one tag team that is obviously really over. They do a lot of crazy spots.
The Young Bucks.
The Young Bucks. Jeez, couldn't think of their name for some reason. Young Bucks are awesome. They're a lot of fun to watch. Nothing about them is real. Like,
no.
Everything is spot after spot after setup after setup. And after a while, like, yes, they're fun matches, especially the first, I would say, 5 to 10. And then you see that they're on the card, and it's like, well, I mean, I know what I'm going to get.
Yeah,
and that could be part of the problem. I'm not far enough into Zack Sabre's collection of matches and stuff to say if I think that could be the issue or problem with him personally. I do think that if WWE's, if he's willing to get molded a little bit, because I do think he has a cool style and he has a nice look to him, that he could definitely fit that mold of being somebody that could, you know, could be very prosperous in the WWE.
Yeah, Zack Sabre Jr. is one of probably my top three favorite wrestlers to watch. I eat the dude up. I don't buy a lot of wrestlers' t-shirts, and his t-shirts are slightly more expensive than most because they're made from a company in the UK, and I buy all the shirts that he brings with him to shows. I love what he brings to the table, and I hope, you know, the things that they might not like about him, I mean, they say that his holds look too easy, or that, you know, he transitions too smoothly, and that that's not realistic, and I don't disagree with that. Like, I could see the argument. It's just hard to take that from a company that lets a dude run out and throw 7 Superman punches in a match.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know, it's professional wrestling. Like, I don't know how real it needs to be. The Young Bucks would be a much better example. If they went to the WWE and they did their match in NXT, that crowd would eat them up for a match or two, and then it would just be like, well, wait, none of that made sense. And it doesn't. I mean, yeah. I love the Young Bucks, but they don't make sense. Everything is just a spot fest. There's very little selling, and it's to get to the, you know, the Meltzer driver or whatever else they're going to hit. You have to know what you're getting into. But, you know, Zack Sabre Jr., at least he sells and works over a body part. It's just evidently there are some people that think it doesn't look realistic or it's too easy looking, which I think is fair. If he wants to be molded by them and he signs and that's what they want, I hope that they go that route. I just hope they don't change him too much.
Yep, I agree with that. All right, do we have any more for the Sweet 16?
So there's 3 matches for tomorrow night's show.
Yes, and what are they? Let's do a little preview, even though by the time people hear this, they might have already happened. But let's see how close we can get.
So we've got Lince Dorado is going to be facing Rich Swann.
Okay.
I
see Rich Swann going over on that. I feel like they're pushed. I've just from the grapevine, from Twitter, and people that I listen to as well, everyone seems really high on Rich Swann. So I'd find it surprising if he lost this one against somebody who, I don't know. I mean, I guess there's that chance, but who's he facing again? It's going to be
Lince Dorado. There's in my mind's eye, there's no way that Rich Swann loses this match.
Yeah, I don't know this Lince Dorado nearly enough.
He's okay. He was trained by Mike Quackenbush in the Chikara Wrestle Factory, and he wrestled there for a number of years. And Chikara is this very lucha.
Oh yeah, Chikara is fun. It's definitely it's comedy as well as wrestling.
It's a niche.
Yes, yes.
You know, I mean, it's similar to Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, not in style, but that like it hits a certain type of fan. Chikara does a really good job of mixing pro wrestling, lucha, and comic books together. And if it's not everybody's thing, he's good. He ended up relocating to Florida and working the indies there. I'm not a huge fan, but I like him okay. But Rich Swann, who happens to also be from my hometown of Baltimore, he's really good.
Very good.
And, you know, he's been all over the world. If he's 25, I'd be surprised. I think he's 24 or 25, something like that. He's super young, lots of, you know, potential. Really small guy. But he's got that it factor with the charisma.
Yes, he
you
does.
You know, and you can't to steal a line, you can't teach that. he's, you know, he has good facials, he has good promo skills, and in the ring he's phenomenal. I wouldn't be surprised if he won the tournament. But I definitely there's no way he's losing against Lince Dorado. Match after that is probably my sleeper match for the Sweet 16, which is Zack Sabre Jr. and Drew Gulak.
Drew Gulak had a good match against Harv Savar or whatever. How do you pronounce
it?
However you pronounce it. Anyways, but I liked what he did. I was surprised that both brothers, you know, went under. I was pretty surprised by that. So the fact that they did and this Drew guy went over and he performed very strong. That was a while ago. That was either on the first or second episode total. So like I'm trying to remember all the stuff about it. He didn't stick out to me as much as Zack Sabre Jr. did for sure. So I would see Zack Sabre Jr. going over in this one.
I agree. I will say I'll take my opportunity to put Drew Gulak over hard. Having watched him, he came through the CZW Combat Zone Wrestling training facility. He's one of the teachers there.
Oh, wow.
He works in Chikara. He's one of the teachers at the Chikara Wrestle Factory. He also is one of the trainers for Evolve. I mean, he's behind the scenes a lot, and I think he was one of those guys that when he got announced, most people didn't know who he was. You'd have to be a really hardcore indie guy, and you'd almost have to limit that hardcore indie to the East Coast, which is primarily where he's worked. He's done some PWG. He's really, really, really good. He can work strong style. He's very, very technically sound. He does a tag team with his brother, whose name is Rory. They do this this gimmick called the Amazing Gulak Brothers, where That's almost good. After every spot, they stop and throw their arms up and yell out "Amazing!" and it's I've only gotten to see it once live, but it's really good. There's a lot of charisma there. He's kind of towards the main event level of Evolve, which I know I'm mentioning Evolve a lot, which is the partner company to the WWE and NXT now. I don't know whether they'll offer him a contract. They should. I don't know that he has the best look. Yeah, I don't always, you know, the first few times I saw Drew Gulak, I was kind of like, what is this guy? Because he doesn't look especially tough, but he is. He hits hard. I hope that they keep him on. I would imagine that Zack Sabre Jr. wins also. But I like Drew Gulak a lot. I think if people pay attention to him, whether he gets signed or not, they'll see good things out of him. And whether he gets signed this time, I think eventually he's going to be an NXT guy.
That's good. It sounds like he's a pretty busy guy, so I wouldn't be shocked to him losing is in part to the fact that he has his hand in a lot of different pots, and he doesn't want to be stuck doing one thing by itself, basically. But yeah. The final
is my official pick to win the tournament, Johnny Gargano against TJ Perkins, which if you take away how talented both of them are and how good the match is going to be, to know their history, and they've both gone into their history a little bit, especially TJ Perkins, about having wrestled for nearly 16 years, even though he's, you know, barely 30 or however old he is. He's been wrestling since he was 14 or 15. And I've seen him all over the place. He used to wrestle under the name Puma, under a mask with the Havana Pitbulls, which was Rocky Romero and Ricky Reyes. And then he moved to TNA, and he did the Manic gimmick and the Suicide gimmick, and then, you know, he went to Evolve, and he dropped the mask and started wrestling under TJ Perkins. That dude has been through a lot, and much like Zack Sabre Jr. watches matches, he's technically a wizard. He transitions from move to move really, really, really well, but he can also throw kicks and strikes. And then I can't imagine having anything bad to say about Johnny Gargano. I think that if you look at him, how he wrestles, the promos that he cuts, his look, Johnny Gargano is what you want out of a pro wrestler. I mean, there's a reason that they call him Johnny Wrestling, and there's a reason that he's so super over. You know, anybody that hasn't watched NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2, if for no other reason than the tag team title match with him and Tommaso Ciampa versus The Revival, you need to watch that show because it's so good. And that match is probably the best match of the entire SummerSlam weekend. But Johnny Gargano is my pick to win. I mean, he's signed to an exclusive deal now. When he and Tommaso Ciampa signed their contracts, they were allowed to continue to work indies. So it was just that they were available to NXT, but not exclusive. They're both exclusive now because of their work, because the WWE didn't want to lose them to injury on an indie or anything like that. I love Johnny Gargano. He's my pick to win the entire thing.
Gargano and Ciampa, Ciampa, is that how you pronounce
it? Yeah.
Secret, maybe best match of the first round?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it was
so
darn close. That match was absolutely stellar for the very first round, and it ended perfect. Like, that was what professional wrestling is all about, when it's done correctly and it tells a story and it allows you to get into the psychology between two people. Having this matchup is just amazing, and that's what that match was able to offer, luckily. So, but yeah, that might be the secret best match of the first round. I see. Here's the thing: is I don't know a ton. I do watch NXT. I'm kind of that guy that watches the big matches when people talk about, like, when Natsuki Amora came, and when Samoa Joe, and when Finn Balor, like when all the champions more or less had these great matches, and Sami Zayn and stuff like that. Those are the matches I've been paying more attention to. So, Johnny Wrestling, I heard the name just because of how much he is over, but I didn't really watch any of his stuff till this one. Same thing with TJ Perkins. Did not know that he was doing the Suicide gimmick, though. That's really interesting.
Yep.
he was good in that. Well, I mean, a good wrestler, I guess, is what I should say. So I don't know how this one will fly out at all. This is one that I don't have a... This one I'm going to be able to sit down, relax, enjoy, and not think anything about it besides can't wait to see who wins.
Yeah, no, I agree. To touch on the Ciampa-Gargano match, which had completely slipped my mind, very similar to what you were talking about earlier. That was a match that was... It was great, but I would have loved to have seen it as like a semifinal.
Yeah, it was that good. Yeah, yeah, that really was. If they would have been on opposite sides of the brackets, like, and I don't know why they didn't do that, right? Like, they didn't have the brothers fight each other. Why do the tag team against each other? Like, that would have been a great, even Final Four, right? Like, that would have been a great Final Four match. Like, because
yeah, there should have been some
stake.
Someone there. Yeah, exactly. And it should have been something that, you know, week to week to week they could talk about, like. Well, look, you know, even if they were on the same side of the bracket, but one at the top and one at the bottom.
I would have rather seen it like that. If they would have, that would have been like the best way to do it, because then they could have had this friendship blossom. Well, I mean, obviously they're great friends, as they brought up many, many times. They could have had these like friendly, like, oh yeah, good job, you won, blah, blah, blah. But like have like this like great disdain of like, if we both make it to the Final Four, I'm going to kick your head in.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Which is what this first round did, which was great, but they could have built that drama a little bit longer, sadly. It would have been really good.
Yeah, I mean, they basically, the build of it was what you had already seen in NXT. Mm-hmm. And I would have loved to have seen, you know, the commentators each week talking about like, well, Johnny Gargano won again and so did Ciampa, so they're on a, you know, a collision course.
Yes.
And have them in backstage promos talking about how, you know, like, hey, I really liked your match tonight, but... We know where it's getting to be crunch time. I plan on winning this tournament. And instead, there was none of that. So it was kind of, it just seemed like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I agree completely.
I mean, it happens. I mean, I think that we're going to be seeing that match again, because after watching the NXT TakeOver, I'm convinced that at some point Tommaso Ciampa is going to be kicking his head in and turning on him. But we'll see. I mean, I would like to see more matches between the two of them.
For sure. Well, I think that about covers it for the Cruiserweight Classic conversation that we're going to have here. And I guess to a point, like, that's going to be our mark, you know, from this is a throwback now to the namesake that I'm trying my best to figure this out. But that was the mark out section. Now we're going to move over to the smart. Get it? You see what I'm doing? You see?
It was a good one. It's clever.
I feel like it's okay, right? Like, I have a huge smile on my face, like I'm some sort of like mad genius, but like I feel pretty good about it. We're going to talk about SummerSlam. SummerSlam, obviously, much better pay-per-view than I expected it to be. Shocked that it was 4 hours. I don't know how I missed it. I don't know why I thought 11 matches would fit into 3 hours of show. It turns out it didn't, because a couple of them were smush feshes anyways. But, I don't know. I don't want to talk about the entire card just because I think that would take too long. But I think there's a couple of matches worth talking about. Obviously, I want to hear your thoughts on Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton. Let's save that for the very end. What was your match of the night? I think that's a good way to start. What was your favorite match of the night?
Oh, hands down, John Cena, AJ Styles.
Yes. Yes. How going back to the wrestling is good when it tells a story. This match, winning clean, winning effectively, but putting both men to look strong still, like skill and power. I wish more WWE fans knew who AJ Styles was based on his TNA run and his New Japan run, because of just how good he still looks really good now. Don't get me wrong. Like, he's still a very, very, very good wrestler, but he was the guy. He was the person that you could see the future in very, very plainly. Like, there's a reason why that gimmick when Ric Flair went over to TNA and he put his... You know, the phenomenal one, and he threw him in the coat and stuff like that. It works so well because that's who AJ Styles seems to be. And this was the match that I think it lived up to all the hype. Like, it lived up to every, and it's amazing how slow the match went, but it felt like it was moments away from ending every moment. It was a great match, by far the match of the night for me too.
Let's, you know, there's a few things to touch on what you just said. The AJ Styles, even now, maybe not because he's limited by the WWE, but definitely up until he signed, there's a period of time where he was the best wrestler in the world.
Yeah.
It was when he was in TNA. It was when he went to when he went to New Japan, and they let him turn heel, and he was given the IWGP Heavyweight Championship in his first match. it you know, that was what got the WWE's attention. They didn't want him when he left TNA. They weren't interested, but they saw him go to New Japan. They saw his work, and it was just like, how do we not sign this guy? He's the best wrestler in the world. He can talk. He looks good. I'd like the haircut to go away.
Right. That haircut needs to die a grisly fire. Like, there needs to be a hair versus hair match, him and Dolph Ziggler or something, and get rid of that hair already, AJ Styles.
But the match, you know, being a smart wrestling fan or a smark or whatever you want to call it, I, you know, would love the opportunity for people to listen and hear that John Cena is a good pro wrestler, and he gets a bad rap because he's got a stale character.
Yes.
He had, you know, his look hasn't changed in 12 years. The colors changed, but the catchphrases stay the same. His gimmick doesn't change. I get it. Like, he's super over with kids. That's really important to him personally. He's never turning heel. I mean, people want it. I would love to see it, but he's willing to never get that run in because he doesn't want to turn his back on kids. And I think that makes me respect him more because, you know, like, if he turned heel, it would be money.
Yes.
I don't think the company wants him to do it, but I don't think that he would either. I mean, maybe something in between, but he's never going to come out and say, you know, like the stuff that Hogan did when he turned heel. You're never going to see that from John Cena. He's too invested in his fan base. But he's one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I think it's hard to really argue with the fact that, every time I fell out of professional wrestling and back into professional wrestling, like, there's this moment of like, okay, John Cena, like, especially like looking back at a couple years ago at SummerSlam when John Cena single-handedly destroyed the Nexus, like, it's easy to hate John Cena for being the good guy. But when you hear him cut promos like the one he did with AJ before SummerSlam on a SmackDown, you remember, like, this guy legitimately loves what he does.
Yep.
And you feel for him in that fact that this match ended the best way it possibly could, because after hearing him give that promo, it's not that you want to see him lose, it's that you want to see somebody best him. And yep. That's what AJ did, and it was such a good match.
It was a good match. Like you said, he won clean, which was so important.
Yes.
Because he didn't win clean the first match, and most people that beat John Cena, you know, outside of that, the Kevin Owens win.
That was an amazing win too. Like, you know, say what you will about John Cena, but it seems like, you know, nearing the ending part of his career, I would say we have another, you know, 3 years of strong wrestling and then the last 2 years of just kind of something different maybe. But he has put certain wrestlers, like obviously AJ Styles maybe didn't need it as much, but that Kevin Owens win, like, we should all remember, like, that was huge. Yeah. That was unbelievable. Like, legit clean win with the pump, pop-up powerbomb and everything. You're like, what?
Well, and the whole thing, you know, the other thing was they dropped the ball with Kevin Owens after that, having him, you know, lose two consecutive matches. But, you know, it's worth mentioning that John Cena didn't go into any room and say, I want to beat this guy. Like, I want my wins back. You know, he does what the company asks him to do. And, you know, they made the right call with AJ. AJ got a win with interference over John Cena, so he gets a rematch at the second biggest show of the year, and he beats him clean. And he kicks out of everything the way that John Cena normally does, and then nails him with that phenomenal forearm after taking the elbow pad off, which I really liked because it was just like he hit the first one and he kicked out. He had a Styles Clash. You know, it made sense to, take the protection off of your elbow to give that extra oomph to that move.
Yes.
It was good ring psychology. Like, John Cena knows how to put a match together. I mean, I listened to Chris Jericho's podcast, and this past week he was talking with Finn Balor, and Jericho said something that I didn't realize that puts John Cena in a completely different light, and that's that John Cena calls all of his matches in the ring.
Yeah.
And he's probably the only person in the WWE that's still allowed to do that because they really overproduce everything generally.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine that, especially even some of the newer guys, the indie guys that came over, and I don't mean that as a diss by any stretch, but I mean like Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, like they've had great matches in the past couple of times, and I doubt even they're calling their matches in the middle. Like, I mean, they have a great chemistry. They've done it for a long time, so certain spots, certain things, but for somebody like John Cena, from basically start to finish, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And if that's true, like, you know, just like that match, I don't know if it's been rated yet by Wrestling Observer, whatever, the guy, Dave, whatever. But that was a 5-star match. Like, that had everything you wanted to see in it. And if it was straight called in the match, in the progress of it is just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not, you know, there, you will get those wrestling fans that want to give all that credit to AJ Styles. And, you know, it takes two people to tango in that situation. It's the same thing with Roman Reigns. God, people hate him, but that guy can work. You know, I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think he can work, though. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of things about Roman Reigns that I don't like. He's the fact that, I don't know, I've heard this recently a couple of times, but, like, the whole body armor thing, but he still sells that he gets hit in the gut. Like, that's a problem. Like, that's poor working in a lot of ways. Like, obviously, that's not his fault. That's creative for giving him stupid body armor. But still, there's just something frustrating.
When they're putting a match together, are producers telling him to do that?
Oh, yeah.
You know, are they saying, you know, I mean, obviously he wears the body armor, which is not a good look. But I mean, someone has to be, you know, he's not going out there and calling his matches.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and the things that I don't like about Roman Reigns, the scripted promos and the fact that he can't deliver them well. The things I don't like about him aren't his fault. It's not his fault that he's doing 10 Superman punches in a match. That, you know, that's, he's being told to do that.
He's trying to be, they're booking him to be as strong as possible. But not only that, but I mean, for a bad example, like, they're trying to book him Superman. I mean, that's, sadly, that's kind of what they're trying to do with, especially with the fact that that's his quote unquote, one of his signature moves and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, they want him to look and appear like that. They want him, let's be honest, they want Roman Reigns to be the next John Cena. I mean,
oh, absolutely. I mean, you could see that from the way they started booking him.
Oh, yes. I mean, they want him to have that big punch. They want him to be that great smile, the Roman Empire. It's when older fans like me and you get sick of something like that, you know that it's only because they're trying to appeal to kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, and that's who, you know, I mean, the comparisons between he and Cena are fair because he's been booked that way. But people forget that, you know, what got Roman Reigns over was the Shield.
Yes.
It wasn't his ability to come out and cut promos or whatever. Cena got over before he became this cookie cutter face.
Yep. And that's,
you know, he was super over when he was doing the raps. And that gave him credibility so that when he became corny, like, men rejected him. A lot of men, let's, you know, be completely honest, rejected him just because they were jealous, because he's a good looking dude that was successful, that could talk.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also because he came out and he said a bunch of stuff that would pop kids and women and not fans like us.
Yep.
Roman's not that way. He has no backstory. I mean, it's basically just like he's become the least talented member of the Shield. And that's how a lot of people look at him. They didn't build him. He went from being, you know, the third member of the Shield to a main event player with no rhyme or reason for it.
Yep.
And people rejected it like crazy. At this point, I don't think you can fix Roman Reigns without turning him.
Yeah.
And they really seem against doing that.
I don't know. The way that they booked him against Rusev, obviously, just going over that one real quick, the United States Championship match, which was supposed to be Rusev versus Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns just beat the crap out of Rusev, which made the match get terminated because Rusev was unable to continue. There's only a babyface does not beat somebody till they're unable to continue.
No. And if you look at that gimmick, it was really weird because before that you had a guy is defending his wife's honor, you know, when they're celebrating their wedding, and another guy comes out and interrupts it and ends up, you know, insulting them, and then the wife gets thrown into a cake. Who's really the heel in that situation?
Yep.
Because classic booking would say that Roman is the heel and Rusev is the face defending his wife. So that was all weird, but he came off much more heelish at SummerSlam with the way that there was no match. He just completely annihilated him.
Which I don't know how I feel about that, because I wanted to see a legit match, even though I was shocked where they decided to place the match. It was so weird to see the United States title take precedent in a lot of ways over the Universal and also the heavyweight championship. That was really weird to me, the way that they booked that. But yeah, obviously it didn't take place, so we're going to see a rematch at, not Backlash, probably Night of Champions, I guess, right? Because that would be
unless they do it on Raw.
Which I guess wouldn't be too shocking considering what they did with the Women's Championship. I do want to talk about briefly Sasha Banks versus Charlotte, because those two only put on good matches. I thought that it was, what was the last pay-per-view before this one?
I'm not up on my WWE pay-per-views well.
I can't remember what it was, but the women's match in that one as well was, it was fantastic. And this one was a fantastic, like, women's wrestling, especially in the WWE. I shouldn't say that about any other promotion, honestly. Well, besides TNA, but don't watch TNA right now. well, certain things you can. But not the women's wrestling, though. But the women's wrestling in WWE has taken a monstrous step forward. I mean, these girls remind me of old Intercontinental Championship matches. And I mean that in the best way. Like, I'm talking Mr. Perfect, Bret Hart. I'm talking Dolph Ziggler and Daniel Bryan when they were doing their run with it, and Cody can't think of his last name. Cody
Rhodes.
Yeah, I don't know why that escaped me. Cody Rhodes and half the people that he was putting on matches with. Like, the Intercontinental Championship used to obviously be known as the workhorse title and stuff like that. And that's what this women's championship has become. Like, it is so good. I couldn't believe they booked this match before that 3-on-3 tag team women's match.
Yeah,
that made no sense at all. That was so weird.
I love. Yeah, it was super weird.
Oh, it was for the pop for Nikki. That's what it was.
Yeah, that's all it was. And I mean, you know, I'm not a Nikki Bella fan, but
yeah, no.
And I know a lot of people that are. I'm not a fan. I got nothing but respect for someone that has that kind of neck surgery and works their way back. So I give her all the respect in the world for that. The women's title match and the women's revolution. I like it. It's still not what I wanted out of it, because there's still generally, if it's on Raw, it's more likely that you're going to see either a promo or a 5-minute match. It's not what it is in NXT.
Very true. But they're all coming
really
up.
Really good. Yeah, and they are all coming up. They're going to leave that division dry in NXT at some point. I'm going to say something that's not very popular, and people can definitely reach me on Twitter at NukeTheBridge. I think that Sasha Banks, I like that match. I like Charlotte a lot. I like Sasha a lot. But I think that Sasha being on the main roster, not being in NXT, and not having Triple H there has exposed a lot of sloppy wrestling on her part.
Yeah, I agree. There's a little bit of that. And I think that's why after the WrestleMania 3-way match that her, Becky Lynch and Charlotte had, that was a amazing match right there.
Yes,
but
I think that was the best match of the show
by far, right? Yes, that is what I've been saying ever since. That was the best match of WrestleMania. But I think that's why she was taken off. A lot of people are like, where'd the boss go? I think she was kind of put back into developmental a little bit, and also she's obviously was suffering some sort of back problems, I guess, a little bit too, which is supposedly the reason why she might have lost this match to Charlotte.
Well, she's definitely got an injury, because what I've read is that she's taken time off to heal. I like Sasha. She's got a good move set. It's just that the spots where it looks like she's getting hurt, they look like they're her fault.
Yeah, there's certain things that she feels. She kind of looks green too in that one respect. The one thing about Charlotte that I really like about her is she has a great presence and a persona, and her everything she does looks like she's. I love it when she has that desperation look in her eyes when she's going after stuff. Sasha still doesn't feel like she changes gears.
Well, and you know, a big part of it is green is a good word, but. When you watch her, it's like she's looking for a crowd reaction for everything.
Yep, that's a good way to put it.
And, you know, what ends up happening is it slows the match down. Or there are some points where she almost stops altogether. And it makes it look like she's a step behind whoever she's in the ring with, because the rest of those women, they're not doing that.
No.
Charlotte is not looking for a crowd reaction because she knows she's going to get one. You know, she knows that she doesn't have to do any of that. And it just kind of seems like Sasha sometimes looks lost when she's out there. Bayley is not going to look lost. You know, Bayley is the best acquisition that Raw has now that Finn is hurt. And I think that those Bayley-Charlotte matches are going to, you know, if they give them some time, they'll be the best matches on any show that Raw runs.
That'll be interesting to see. I don't know a lot about Bayley. I saw her goodbye match on TakeOver Brooklyn 2, and that was absolutely fantastic. So
yeah.
I do think we have some positive things coming up. But let's go ahead, before this goes too long, I just want to say that Finn Balor winning was awesome, and the fact that he got that he's hurt is terrible. I guess I won't watch Raw for 6 months.
Yeah, right. It's Raw. Say what you will about the WWE. Raw this past week was terrible. I think
it hurts. It
does. I mean, yeah, I talk with a friend of mine all the time about wrestling, and he's a diehard WWE guy. He won't watch anything else, and you know, he says that he just wants to give them the benefit of a doubt. And I was like, I don't do that because they question your intelligence too much. They don't want you to remember things in the long term, and they want you to just kind of buy into what they sell. And that's why they have their quote unquote WWE universe. Those are the fans that they cater to. And not to get too long winded, because we are going long here, but that brand split was supposed to be like a new era, and the new era looks a heck of a lot like the old era.
Yep. All they did was they gave SmackDown a heavyweight title that they instantly made feel lessened by the fact that they brought a new heavyweight title back to Raw, which is fine, but they called it the Universal title, one. And two, Who were the people on Good Morning America after SummerSlam?
Right, they're both Raw wrestlers.
Both Raw wrestlers. Makes no sense at all, but, you know.
Yeah, where's Dean Ambrose in that?
Makes no sense, but yeah, I agree with you completely.
And, you know, not to touch on it much, but the match between Finn and Rollins was really good.
It was good.
I love the finish. I love Finn Balor. I've been watching him since he was Prince Devitt in New Japan. The one thing, you know, there's a lot of fans that are now, if you look at Twitter, there's a lot of people that are coming at Seth Rollins about hurting Finn. And I don't think Seth Rollins is an unsafe worker, but that buckle bomb needs to not happen ever again.
Yeah, the buckle bomb is one of those moves that it's going to cause a... It's going to... Here's... let's say he does it 10 times. It's going to hurt one person. And one person, it's not worth it. It's the same reason they got rid of the blackout or whatever they called it in the WWE. I can't remember what it was. But it's the same reason they got rid of his old finisher. It's because, you know what? It looks good. As long as both wrestlers are on the same page, it's going to always perform well. But the reality is if you do it 10 times, it's going to hurt somebody one time.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, the weird thing about the WWE is that there's people on the indies that do a buckle bomb. Michael Elgin does buckle bombs all the time. There's something about the way that Seth Rollins does it that's higher impact. And I don't know if it's him and his style or what, but I mean, that's Cena got hurt on it. Sting got badly hurt on it. And, you know, and this one wasn't where Finn got hurt wasn't in the turnbuckles. It was on the ring barrier.
I thought it was, too. Like, I that very first one, and it looked like he hit his arm really, really hard. Like
he did. He hit his elbow.
Yep.
And what the story was, this will just give people more respect for Finn, he dislocated his shoulder and popped it back in himself.
Jeez.
And then finished the match.
God.
He tore his labrum on that, which is, you know, that's the 6 months right there.
Oh, my God. And finished. That was at the very beginning of the match. That was literally within the first 3-4 minutes. Like, that's ridiculous. All right. Well, let's go ahead and just say, of course, the winner of Dean Ambrose, Dolph Ziggler, was Dean Ambrose. I thought that was booked well. I didn't like Dolph Ziggler in this match. I thought anybody else could have maybe done a little bit better. I hate to say it because I really, really like Dolph Ziggler, but I'm kind of sick of Dolph Ziggler.
Well, I'm self-admittedly, and this is not a popular opinion, but I'm not a Dean Ambrose fan.
I'm not really that much of a fan of him being the guy. I don't think he's that good. I don't know.
He's a placeholder.
Yeah, and he kind of feels that way, sadly, because I want him to feel stronger, and I feel like one-on-one match is actually a negative in Dean Ambrose. The triple threat match that happened at whatever that one pay-per-view was that neither one of us can remember was a good match, and it was okay that he won that match, but this one-on-one against Dolph Ziggler felt, I don't know, a little weak.
I mean, I agree about Dolph Ziggler. He's the same character. The thing about Dolph Ziggler is they should have pulled the trigger on him a couple of years ago. You know, for him to come out there and talk about, or for them to come out and talk about a new era and how we're, you know, a new era and try to sell this as like something new. Like, Dolph Ziggler's been there for 10 years.
Yeah.
So he's not a new era. He, at this point, he's kind of like worn out. I mean, he's still one of the best performers, but he needs something new.
Yeah, he needs something new. He's the best seller in the WWE probably still. It's crazy to think that he's a two-time world heavyweight champion.
Yep.
It's so weird that he is a two-time and he's still thought of as being I don't know. Just it's weird that he's like, guys, I'm here too. I don't know. It's just it's weird the way.
I mean,
that
some of the commentators were even talking about how he's never won the big one before.
And it's like he's done it twice. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I don't understand. Which big one are you talking about? The Universal? Yeah. Well, no one's done that yet.
Yeah. Right.
All right. So let's go ahead. Let's let it out. Let's get this done and over with. Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton. I'm going to go first. I'm going to just say what I think about it first, and then I want to hear what you have to say about it. I liked a lot of this match. I enjoyed the start. I loved the fact that Randy Orton started to get some offense in. As soon as you saw him hit the RKO on the outside, and then you saw him hit the DDT, like you're like, okay, this is still okay. This is still a match. This is still a work. This is still a storyline. This is still something that by the end of it, when one or the other pins the other person, I'm going to be okay with it because it doesn't feel like every other match Brock Lesnar's had recently. And then Brock Lesnar went off. He didn't even go off book. That's the thing that I think is bugging me the most about hearing people talk about this is a lot of people are like, oh, man, it blurred the lines between reality and wrestling. It's like, but the reality is it is wrestling. It is a work. It is scripted. And sometimes when they try to do this like pseudo reality type thing, it annoys me because there is no reality in this. And that's not what I'm watching. If I want to watch this thing that was put in front of me, I would have watched the Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz fight, which I did. And I watched that for a different reason than why I watched Randy Orton versus Brock Lesnar. I think my biggest problem with this ending is that there's not a storyline to continue it. So there's nothing else going to be thought about it. And it's supposed to be kind of like this one-shot piece where we're supposed to just, you know, kind of, you know, say like, oh, well, that was that, and it's over. But it doesn't feel justified, and it doesn't feel complete. It just feels kind of like, it kind of feels like Brock took his hand and smacked everybody in the face for believing that there was going to be something more than just a typical Brock Lesnar match. And it's so sad because Brock Lesnar used to put on really good matches. I don't know. That's how I feel about it.
I don't disagree. I agree. I like the beginning of the match. I like Randy Orton's offense. It's been a long time, a year or two, maybe a little bit more, since I was into Brock Lesnar at all. And even then, it wasn't tremendous. I get it. He's an attraction. But, it doesn't leave a match for Brock afterwards. It doesn't leave the possibility for a rematch because the finish was pretty much just like him laying him out and knocking him out until the point that he couldn't, you know, continue. So, I know I've read, you know, that the blood was the only thing out of the whole thing that wasn't planned. Outside of that, it was supposed to finish in about the same amount of time with that finish. It just happened to be that he connected with one nasty elbow, which I think says a lot about Brock, because he should be able to throw those without hurting someone.
And he looked like he was trying to.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he was being real snug. I mean, look at of the last few years when there's been color in a match, it's almost always with Brock.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't look safe to me, even though I've read that, you know, some people say that he is. I mean, Ambrose on, you know, Austin's podcast said he's lazy. I think that that's true. My biggest issue with this is they book him to work the main event against Randy Orton, who is going to be there, you know, for the next couple years or whatever. That's fine. If they're going to have Lesnar win, that's fine. I don't agree with it because Orton is going to be there. What I have issue with is you have Finn Balor win the Universal title the next night. There's a legitimate injury that happens, and they're going to have a tournament. Where is Brock Lesnar?
Yeah.
Why is he not walking out? And I understand that, you know, from a shoot standpoint, his contract doesn't call for him to be there. But from a storyline perspective, you've just destroyed the what could be considered the top or one of the top performers on the opposite brand. There's a new champion on Raw, but take that away. There's going to be a new champion crowned. Why is he not walking out asking for the title? Why is he not coming out asking for the title every single time he appears? It doesn't make any sense for him to want to face a Randy Orton.
Yep.
Or want to face a Dean Ambrose at WrestleMania. Like, his sole focus should be that title. I don't want to see it on him again, but it doesn't make sense for him to beat Randy Orton and go home for 4 months and show back up at the Royal Rumble and face, you know, whoever then.
Yeah, I think this is also sadly just kind of like a piece of Brock Lesnar recently. I don't know if it's just because of the way that they're treating him as this like gladiator and monster heel and stuff like that. But his match with Cena was good. His match with The Undertaker was good. So it's so sad that they're now using him so poorly. I don't like seeing a part-time wrestler go over on a workhorse. It's not fair. And I think that, I guess, like, you know, thank you, Randy, for like being willing to take that bullet. I thought the promo that they cut, you know, with what they were kind of dealing with was really well done. Like, I really, really thought there was at least a 75% chance in my heart this was going to be a legitimate wrestling match.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, me too. And I mean, it had aspects to it that felt different than the last few Brock matches, but in the end it was just another, you know, suplex and then a whole bunch of hard strikes and then his hand is raised. And, you know, I hope for our sake that what happened in the aftermath is not going to set up a Brock Lesnar versus Shane McMahon match, because
I don't want to see that. I do not want to see that.
No, and it wouldn't make any sense. I mean, I don't believe for a second that Shane McMahon would last a minute with him.
No, especially with the way that they're booking him. Like, that was the thing about Shane McMahon versus The Undertaker. It's like, Shane McMahon, high, you know, daredevil, blah, blah, blah. Like, he's not going to win, but maybe he can do something. But, like, against Brock Lesnar, it's like, no, he's just going to die.
Yeah, pretty much.
Brock is just going to murder him, like, if they did that, because there would be no other way to book it. Like, that would be the end of Shane McMahon.
And maybe I wouldn't have felt so salty about the end of SummerSlam if it hadn't also felt like it went on for half of my life.
It was a long SummerSlam. I'm glad I watched it in two sittings. I watched 2 hours at a time, which was good for me because I hung out with my kids in the middle of it. And then it's like, oh, I'm going to go watch more wrestling, not realizing I had another 2 hours left.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But I don't know. Yeah, this is just our little segment. Hopefully we can do this again maybe for the next Cruiserweight Championship round. Cruiserweight Classic round would be a lot of fun to do this again. Maybe we can try to throw in maybe a couple pay-per-views whenever they happen as well. But this is also going to go on our Nintendo Fever feed, so we have to quickly say our favorite wrestling video game. And then maybe next time we join together, we'll talk a little bit more in depth. But this has gone on way longer than I expected, so we're only going to kind of like mention our wrestling video game talk, and then we'll maybe talk about it in depth and on another type of episode. I'm going to go first real quick just by saying my favorite wrestling video game is Fire Pro Wrestling 2 for the Game Boy Advance or Fire Pro Wrestling X for the Super NES, because Fire Pro Wrestling is where it's at. Yourself?
Yeah, I could easily go. Probably my all-time favorite is Super Fire Pro Wrestling for Game Boy Advance. I still play that game.
Oh, yeah.
I spent a ton of time going through and editing all the names so that instead of having, you know, some nonsense name, I get, you know, Misawa versus Kobashi. But I was a big fan of the No Mercy and WrestleMania 2000 and even some of the earlier WCW games. I mean, if you're taking handheld out of the equation, and I have not played the Super Nintendo Fire Pro Wrestling or X, but for a long time, if you wanted to play a wrestling game that was above average to excellent on a console, you had to get one of those in the States, especially without getting a modified or an import. You were looking at No Mercy or those games that actually had wrestling holds and you could knock people out in them, and it was challenging. I mean, I still turn my N64 on and play them sometimes because we'll never see them on virtual console ever.
Yep.
But
great wrestling game for home console, probably Day of Reckoning 2 for the GameCube, because it uses that same No Mercy engine and such. That's really, really good. Also, funny story, just throwing this out here. I have a PS4. It was broken for a very long time. Recently just took it apart. Just so, and fixed it. Now it plays games off of disc for one reason only. I plan on buying 2K17. That's it. I hope it turns out to be pretty good. It looks good so far, especially the backstage brawls.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I think probably the last game I got was 2K13, the one with CM Punk on the cover.
Yes.
I mean, I still, that's the problem with, like, I'm a hardcore Nintendo gamer. I have a Wii U and I have a 3DS that pretty much goes everywhere with me. And you can't find a good wrestling game on a DS. There's never been one made for the DS that was, I mean, there's some that are playable, but that doesn't make them good.
Yeah, I lied to myself all the time that SmackDown versus Raw 2008 was like this like really good game because it felt like No Mercy for the first like 5 minutes that you played it. But
yeah.
Then you slowly realize like, nope, this is just kind of boring. It's all the same wrestler. Everyone's the exact same person.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty much. Is that the one? Is that the one that features ECW or is that 2009?
It's whichever one was the last one is the one that's really good. So okay. Maybe it was 2009 that's the really good one because the ones, the two before that, we should do a wrestling on Nintendo retrospective podcast.
Oh, yeah.
That would be so good. But before we go any further, because we could keep going down this rabbit hole, I feel, we're going to go ahead and end it right here. Where can people find you on Twitter?
So on Twitter, I am at Nuke the Bridge.
Awesome. And where can they find your other podcast?
If you go on to iTunes, and I think we're going to, you know, try to do some cross promotion there also. If you go on to iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or Pocket Cast or whatever your preferred platform is, you can search for Working Arrest Hold. And under Working Arrest Hold, you can find my podcast, The Indie Darlings, where we speak strictly about the U.S. and U.K. indie scenes and New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Which is absolutely awesome. If you guys have not heard it yet, I definitely recommend, especially if you're a wrestling fan, you'll definitely enjoy that. Even for someone like me who's not a huge indie guy, I like hearing the information about the indies because those are the future. And a lot of times they hit the big leagues as well. Obviously, you can find me on Twitter at @OnlyMattDesen. You can find Nintendo Fever on Twitter at Nintendo Fever. Obviously, this one we're going to try and get on both feeds if possible. So you're either listening to this on the Working Arrest Hold feed or the Nintendo Fever feed. Whichever feed you're listening to, go to the other feed and feed that feed by subscribing to that feed. I don't even know what those words didn't go together, did they?
No, we'll pretend.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Thank you guys so much for listening. For me and for Ben, we're going to go and grapple in the back. Don't watch. Bye.
Thanks a lot.